Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. This is Faith Radio Mornings, 4 minutes after the hour. I'm Paul Perreault with you one more time, filling in for Peter Kapsner, who will actually be back on Thursday. And then actually tomorrow, looks like Carmen LeBurge will be stepping in the seat and hosting the morning as well as her afternoon show, Connecting Faith. She is a busy woman. So anyway, joining us right now, it's a Tuesday morning, which means it's Monday, getting back into it after a holiday. Maybe it was hard. We need to hear some good stories, some kindness stories. And with that, we have our kindness. I like to call her an expert. She doesn't take it, but, I take it. Nicole Phillips, hey, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Paul. I say advocate, you
okay.
Can say expert, whatever.
Whatever!
Yeah, tomato, tomato.
We're not calling this off, though. We want to hear a story.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So today is Giving Tuesday, which basically, is like Christmas for every nonprofit out there. And so many of them get their donations doubled today. And so it's a really big day. But sometimes we can look at those big organizations and think, what do they really need my measly $5 for, right? Like my drop in the bucket isn't going to matter. So I think it's important that we really remember the people behind those organizations. And the way I do that is through my niece, Kate. Kate is 21 years old now, and she goes to Alverno College in Milwaukee. But when she was in eighth grade, Kate has had her whole entire life chronic pain. She's never lived an entire one day of her life without pain. And so when she was in eighth grade, the pain got so bad that she developed a stutter, and she lost her ability to walk. She was in a wheelchair. Mm. And, that was all she could see, Paul. It was terrible. And so in kind of an effort to help her navigate a new lifestyle with all this pain, her parents sent her to the Mayo Clinic, and they did a 28-day kind of readjustment for her brain, where they taught her how to deal with pain and deal with people at the same time, and how to live a life with chronic pain. And it was outpatient, so she wasn't staying in the hospital. And her parents started out staying at a hotel. Now, a hotel every night for 28 days, can you imagine what that cost?
Yeah.
And, and so they were able to get into the Ronald McDonald House. And that was really essential for Kate, because it gave the whole family a place to go after these long sessions each day. And, Kate now she can walk, the stutter's gone, she's a college student. It's really a beautiful story, but it happens because people give, their $5, $10 on to some of these big organizations that are working to just spread kindness in their own way.
Yep, a lot from a little becomes a lot. Or a little from a lot of people. There we go. I did it backwards. A little from a lot of people does a lot.
There you go. You had it. It's like a tongue twister, but you had it.
There you go. Good reminder on this Giving Tuesday. Thank you, Nicole, for joining us this morning on Faith Radio Mornings.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Dr. Stevens is next here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years without Christ. Now I want to understand.
10 after the hour, Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault. That is the walk-up music for Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association, joining us on Skype this morning. I love it that you make house calls with us, Doctor.
It's great to be with you this morning. Here, it's a little chilly outside, so I'm glad I'm on Skype.
Yeah, you're coming at us from what, Tennessee?
Tennessee. It's a little warmer down here.
What's it, what's the weather like this morning?
This morning it was about 32, which is, you know, that's warm for you this time of year, I guess.
That's short sleeve weather.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for joining us. And over the weekend, boy, a lot of news came out over the weekend, including stuff in health news where a Chinese researcher claims to have altered the DNA of babies to good intention, you know, because the parents had HIV and they're trying to make it so the baby it was in utero, if I remember right, wouldn't be afflicted by HIV by making them HIV resistant. But that is raising tons of ethical questions.
It is, and I question the motives as well. We can get into that. There's a new, very powerful technology that came out a few years ago called CRISPR-Cas9. Those are all abbreviations. I won't try to explain what the actual words mean. But essentially, you can go in and make a gene inactive fairly accurately, or insert a gene, take one out, insert one in. It's a powerful new technology, and it's not very expensive. And has a tremendous potential for doing some good things, but also for doing some things that are not so good. And this is the first time that anyone has admitted to actually doing genetic editing on an embryo, which is legal in the United States, but then going ahead and implanting those embryos in a woman. And this man did this. He was a Chinese scientist. He's actually a physicist. He's not even an expert in this area with training. He was trained here in the United States and then went back to China, where regulations we don't have very good ones, but they have almost none at all. The only thing you can't do there is clone. And so he went to these patients one of the couple had HIV, and essentially said that he was going to edit a gene so that there would be less chance their children would get HIV. Well, that sounds good till you realize that there's such good drugs for HIV now, it's not going to be passed to the child. The way the child would get it would be the same way the parent got it, through some activity of their own. So this really didn't protect the child from getting this in utero. But he went and got these people and offered them free in vitro fertilization, harvested eggs, manipulated them, and planted them, I think, 11 attempts and 11 embryos in 6 attempts, and got one set of twins that's now in utero. A lot of outcry over this, because what happens when you do this is you not only affect the child, which we don't know the effect that's going to have on the baby, it can affect other genes by accident. In fact, we know that this gene, when you take it out, this one that has some HIV protection, if it's not there, that gene actually also decreases your fear of getting flu and West Nile virus. In other words, he's increased the risk for other diseases other than the one he was trying to protect them from. There's questions about whether he really got informed consent from these people, whether the free IVF tempted them, whether they really understood what was happening and the risk involved. So all sorts of issues and a huge outcry, as you can imagine, because this crosses an ethical barrier that we've said was inviolate.
Yeah, I was noticing a news article this morning about how even there was 100 scientists in China who called what you did unethical and, quote, crazy. And how's the response? I mean, you mentioned there's been some outcry. How's it been here in the States?
Well, it's been a combination. A lot of people condemning it, often people that are involved in doing embryo editing. But, you know, we act like we're in a much moral better situation here in the U.S., but here it's edit and kill. You can edit embryos, get permission to do it, or people say they're, quote, excess embryos, we're going to donate them to science. And as long as you don't implant them, that's perfectly legal in the United States. So you can talk about which is worse, to implant these or to kill the human beings that have been created in labs and not implanted. But both of them are wrong and shouldn't be done. And so some condemnation, but one Harvard University professor has defended the attempt. And this is a major growing a public health threat with HIV, and I think it's justifiable. But, I mean, we got great treatment for HIV. We don't want people to get it, but it's not like a death sentence like it used to be. But this is a huge risk. And then to add to that, Paul, he's got two of his own companies. He's applied for patents. There's obviously some money involved in getting notoriety, and here I can do this, and, you know, that type of thing to get to worldwide news by releasing this. He hasn't published it. He hasn't been verified in how it was done, all sorts of things that just make this very, very problematic. But you'll see it in the news and probably for a few more days as people express their concern.
Yeah. Now, you were getting to the CRISPR stuff. Now, this has been done on non-humans for, you know, other animals. And you're talking about sometimes there's those unintended consequences. I mean, we've seen that in other animals, right, when this CRISPR technology was used.
Yeah, and there's concern. A few people, scientists that have been able to look at it, question that one of the twins have, it wasn't completely accurate and it affected other genes. You don't know what the long-term effect of that's going to be. There's a lot of unknowns here, and it was just last year that they finally, for the first time, started doing some experiments here in the United States on people with diseases that they thought CRISPR could help. They had a genetic disease. They were suffering from it. Let's see if we can go in and edit your genes in your body. And all the reports on that aren't in. But that's kind of where we are, and that's ethical. If people understand the risk and think this could help cure or ameliorate their problems, then, you know, with proper controls and informed consent, that's okay. But you cannot get permission from an embryo or their children or their children's children or whatever, mm-hmm. and you affect a generation to come otherwise.
Yeah, there's a definite difference between adults consenting to this and then, yeah.
Yeah.
It's 16 after the hour. When we come back, some health news, too, about the global diabetes epidemic. And that is causing problems as far as insulin demand and supply. So stay with us. This is Faith Radio Mornings. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault with Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. I still love your bedside manner, doctor. Or Mike Side Manor. I don't know.
Yeah, Mike Side. That's a good one.
There you go. Anyway, your associate sent an article about the global diabetes epidemic, and it's causing issues as far as insulin supply. But first off, why is diabetes growing so globally? I understand here in America because we have been so engrossed in our sugary foods for so long, and it just affects our bodies. But is this becoming a global problem now?
It is. In fact, it was interesting. It reminded me of a story when I went over. This is in the late 80s when I was in my residency. Took my wife and did a rotation in Kenya where I was at a mission hospital. And we'd been there a couple weeks, and one of the staff walked up to me and said, Dr. Stevens, don't you love your wife? And I thought, whoa, what was this? What's that about? He says, she's so skinny. And in that culture, the fact that if you loved your wife, you fattened her up. You fed her well. And so since my wife wasn't fat, then I must not love her. And that is a sign of wealth and prosperity. And where some of this is coming from is the westernization of diets, more affluence, and then cultural norms of, you know, you like to enjoy and eat good food, but it also is a sign of wealth and appreciation. And so we see that worldwide, almost doubled the percent of patients with type 2 diabetes, and that's the one that's caused by lack of exercise and leads to blindness and kidney failure and heart problems and neuropathic pain, you know, in your legs from your nerves not working right and amputation. It's a serious issue, and combined with that, there's just not enough insulin, and what's there is so expensive that people can't afford it. So what we've dealt with here is now beginning to happen and spread around the world into developing countries, and that's a great concern. The other interesting thing, Paul, is there's some new guidelines that have just come out this week on dealing with our issues of lack of exercise, obesity, and all the problems, mm-hmm. both from the American Heart Association and from the Health and Human Services, and they give us some new guidelines that are pretty good.
Oh, really? Can you outline a few of those?
Well, one of the things they get at is we're just too inactive, and they actually did a survey of this and found that only a small percentage of people sat for less than 4 hours a day and also got exercise. And the problem is that we sit in offices, we sit and watch TV, we sit in cars, we sit, and those things lead to not being well-conditioned and lead to all sorts of healthcare problems, the worst one being premature mortality. You'll die early. And they actually timed and found out that about 14% of people sit for 6 or 8 hours a day in the office, and we're inactive as well. And then others, maybe a little less than 8 hours, we're inactive in huge percentages. And so a lot of this is lifestyle, new recommendations. In fact, it's something happening in my office here where staff are getting stand-up desk. They put a desk module on top of their desk, which they can elevate, and they stand up while they're working to help with their day conditioning. We have a policy where people can take a half hour during their workday and go down and work out in the gym or go walking outside when the weather's nice. How do we become active? Taking the stairs. I came down here to the studio today and walked down 54 steps, and I'll walk 54 steps back up. Just making that a habit instead of taking the elevator, those things can make a big difference in your conditioning And also in your health, help you sleep better, help you think better, be more active as much as you can.
Okay. You know, I was thinking about what you're talking about, and this past weekend, a friend and I went to see the new Wreck-It Ralph movie, and of course there's video games, and one of the scenes has this teenager playing on this rather violent video game, and he's all juiced up, or at least seems to be, and yet he's sitting there.
Yeah.
I mean, and I keep wondering about that. I mean, you have kids who, and even adults, who will do these action games, and they're sitting there, they're getting their adrenaline up, but not doing anything. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, actually, when you get your adrenaline up and you're not active, you constrict your blood vessels and decrease the blood supply. It increases your blood pressure and all sorts of things because you're actually in a stress. I mean, you're stressing, you're fighting. I mean, that's the emotions that you're feeling, the fight or flight response. And frustration sets in and those things. And in moderation, I'm not against video games altogether, but, you know, we have kids that spend hours doing that. They're now recommending to start exercise for your kids at age 3, used to be 6, and encourage them to be very active 3 hours a day in varying intensities. When they get to 6, it can drop down to at least an hour of moderate to vigorous activity, aerobic, brisk walking, biking, running, competitive sports, and then they need to have some exercise that builds strength. And as adults, we should have 2.5 to 5 hours of moderate intensive exercise every week. That's the recommendations. That's at least a half hour 5 days a week, and some of that, 2 days at least, should be strengthening exercises, lifting weights or climbing or doing whatever to help, and then vary what you do. And all those things can help you get in better shape. It's habits. It's things we get into, not, well, I'm going to go do this big program, but just I do this much every day. We actually have a gym in our office, and we tell our staff, go down and take a half hour and get at it. And that's the last thing I do at work every day, is go down there, get on the treadmill, and lift some weights before I go home, and I feel better for it.
Okay, how much can you bench press?
Well, at age 67, I wouldn't I don't even actually measure it.
We just got about another minute, and we'll probably just broach on this, but I wanted to get into this article your friend sent about the 9 signs you're in good shape, even when you think you're not, because sometimes we get down on ourselves about how healthy we are, and... Okay.
Yeah, it is a great article, and there's 9 things to look at. We'll get through as many as we can. First, check your heart rate when you get up in the morning. If it's between a 60 and 100 beats, you're probably in better shape than you think. Keep up with your friends when you're walking or jogging. You know, you're going out for a brisk walk or whatever. If you're out of breath and can't keep up, that's a bad sign. If you can, it's a good sign you're in better shape than you think. How long does it take you to recover after some vigorous exercise? Check your heart rate every minute for up to 5 minutes, and if within 5 minutes it gets back under 100, you're in better shape than you think you are. Exercise consistently, what we've talked about, doing 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, you're in better shape than you think. Physical aspects of parenting. If you got young children, you're pushing a stroller, carrying a baby, they're crawling around on the floor with them, you're probably in better shape than you think. Stairs don't scare you. We've talked about the importance of using stairs. Do a variety of workouts. I can do all different, play some tennis, go jogging. The variety's good, and that's a good sign. If you feel rested, you're sleeping good, that's a sign of you're in good shape. And then your mental health is all right, because we know exercise prevents depression, helps you improve your self-esteem, helps you think better, decreases anxiety. So if your mental health is good, then you're probably in better shape than you think. And those 9 things are things to easy to watch, and kind of, even though the scale's not going down and the pants aren't getting looser, you're probably in better shape than you think.
You know, I was listening to that, and it's almost like this is almost a doctor's version of the Jeff Foxworthy skit here. anyway.
But just give me some hope. That's what we all want, right?
Exactly.
When it comes to exercise and health.
Anyway, thank you so much, Dr. Stevens, for joining us this Tuesday. You have a blessed week.
God bless.
Breakpoint is next. This is Faith Radio Mornings. 32 past the hour, Faith Radio Mornings again. As you just heard from John Stone Treat, yesterday is Giving Tuesday. And wouldn't you know, the fine folks at Wallet Hub, they decided, hey, what are the most charitable states in America? Well, number one, Minnesota, my home state. Congratulations. Followed by Utah, New York, Maryland. And for our Faith Radio listeners in Hartford, Connecticut was number five. For our Faith Radio listeners in Madison, Wisconsin, number 10. So congratulations. And of course, again, Giving Tuesday. And as you can, be as generous as you can to a lot of great ministries and organizations that further the gospel, as well as helping those who are in need. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Twenty-three before the hour, Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, and yesterday I had a wonderful opportunity to talk to Elizabeth Chow. She's a student at, and actually a student senator at UC Berkeley, who recently came under fire for graciously taking a stand on biblical principles, and she explains her prayer for the church.
I really pray that there are two things that we take to heart from everything that's happened. One, I hope that the church continues to dialogue even more about the LGBTQ issue. We don't have to agree theologically and practically 100% about, you know, where we lie theologically, but we do need to talk, right? And I especially say to Christians who may hold different theological or practical views, like, I need to talk to you. Because you disagree with me, I need to know your perspective and hear your opinions, right? And it's not a time for us to just go back to our echo chambers or back to our churches where everybody sees eye to eye. The second thing that I really pray is happening is that we wrestle with what it means as a church to love and to outreach to the LGBTQ community.
That was Isabella Chow. I misspoke. But Isabella Chow, an amazing young lady. And if you'd like to hear the full interview, it is again available at myfaithradio.com under the Faith Radio Morning Show page. Click on the podcast from yesterday. Well, getting back to the issue down at the border that happened over the weekend with the situation near Tijuana. And we're going to be talking with Tony Suarez from the National Christian National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference in just a moment. He's on the line. Sorry, Tony, but we'll get to you in just a moment here on Faith Radio Mornings.
I see it on parents' faces all the time. The stress and strain of dealing with a difficult child who's bent on self-destruction. The pressure of dealing with an out-of-control kid lands squarely on mom and dad and their marriage. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If you're struggling with your teen, you know the situation has the potential to pull families apart. Mom and dad, above all else, you need to protect your relationship. Make a commitment today that you'll do whatever you have to do to shelter and to reignite the passion and respect in your marriage. Look at family struggles as something you both need to manage together. Stop the blame game. Keep your marriage strong.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
Before the hour, Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, and joining me right now is Tony Suarez. He's vice president with the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference and also the author of a new book called The Triumphant Church, which we'll talk about in just a bit. But hey, Tony, thanks for joining us this morning, getting up so early for us.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for having me on the program again.
Good to have you on. And I wanted to bring you on because I wanted to hear from you and your organization regarding the situation that's been happening down along the California a Mexican border with, well, over the weekend, there was just a situation where some of the migrants who are part of that migrant caravan we've been hearing a lot about, they're in a situation that they just seem to be in limbo, and it's getting intense for them. Tell us about what you're hearing.
Well, that's probably the best word, what you use there. Anyone that is in limbo, if you've ever been in any kind of limbo in your life, you know the frustration that exists. And so you have thousands of people that have been walking towards our border, and now this group has broken off. It's gotten violent. And again, you're walking on a path where that you don't really know exactly where it's going to lead to. The migrants have been warned that they're not going to be received into the United States, yet you have people encouraging them to keep coming. You also had hopes that maybe they could migrate and remain in Mexico, and then the Mexican government has withdrawn even some of their support to that. So, just put it in practical terms, imagine if you just took a 1,000-mile walk or 500-mile walk only to hear you're not going anywhere. I mean, and unfortunately, this is what is frustrating to me, Paul, and what tests my spirit, is that our Congress is watching what's happening at the border. Mm-hmm. This is frontline news for every media outlet, and our Congress is watching what's happening, but they don't take action. And it's extremely frustrating because it's the only branch of government, and I'm a broken record at this point on your program. They're the only branch of government that could fix this problem. And they watch the problem, they speak about it, but they have done nothing to solve the problem. And it is time as Americans and as Christians that we hold our elected officials accountable and say enough is enough. It's been over three decades since we have passed true immigration reform, since we've truly dealt legislatively with our immigration system. If I didn't do my job for 30 days, I wouldn't be on the program with you, Paul.
Yeah, I don't think your boss would keep you around. You know, yeah. Rodriguez is a good guy, but he will tolerate a lot, but I don't know that much.
Yeah, he preaches the lamb's agenda, but I might see the lion if I went 30 days without doing my job. And to think of three decades, 30 years of not dealing with immigration reform, and when we do think about that, this is not a Democrat or Republican problem. This is a broken system that has existed under both parties, mm-hmm. and we have used it for political fodder. We've used it to win elections. But we have yet to deal with the issue, and it's time that I pray that this Congress works with the White House, works with the Senate, that this House works with the Senate and the White House and gets this done, because it's high time that someone take responsibility of this issue and bring us resolution.
All right. Tony Suarez, our guest. And Tony, I want you to back up with me if you can, because we hear about this migrant caravan. We've been hearing about it for a couple months now. And who are these people? Why did they leave Honduras and Nicaragua? I mean, why are they risking so much only to come to the border and just continually be stonewalled? Or, well, just, you know, I know a lot of people say they're criminals. Well, I'm sure some are, but give us a background.
When I pastored in Virginia, my disclaimer will be, this is not what I was targeting. It's not what I was seeking. It's what came to me. I had a congregation that was 67% undocumented immigrant, mainly from Central America, from Honduras, Guatemala, Nicaragua, and El Salvador. These are not these were good people that were fleeing MS-13. They were fleeing extreme poverty and sex trafficking, and they wanted to come. American history is taught throughout the entire Western Hemisphere, and they're taught that in the United States, there's free enterprise and there's freedom of religion. There's freedom of speech. It's taught that it's a land that immigrants have inhabited and a country that has loved immigrants. And they hear that and they begin to dream. No pun intended. Not necessarily trying to call, you know, use the term dreamers, which is now politicized. Our system. If you, Paul, if you were a God-fearing, just a good family in Guatemala, you're not rich, you're not of extreme poverty, there's not a true middle class, but you're just a good family in Guatemala, but you feel that the best path for you to take is for you and your family to come to the United States. there is no path for you to come to the United States. And this is the frustration that lies when someone hears about, when all we hear are media clips and someone says, well, they ought to just come the right way. Well, how do you come the right way when there isn't a right way?
Right.
When visa lotteries still exist, which, you know, it's you're gambling your money away. And if I pay $1 million, I can get a visa. There's a particular visa if you have $1 million that you can get a visa to come. But there is no true right way. However, American companies need immigrant labor because it's extremely inexpensive. So our market will hire undocumented immigrants whether we like it or not, so much so that undocumented immigrants are even able to apply for a number to pay their taxes. It's something that's not talked about a lot, but they can apply for an I-10 number. The government made provision years ago so that an undocumented immigrant could get a number, get a job, and pay their taxes. They can't claim a refund, but they can pay into the system and thereby being able to work. So if we as a government say we're going to allow, and I'm making up numbers, but if we say we're going to allow 100,000 immigrant workers into the United States every year, but our market needs 500,000. That means the people that, you know, pick our fruit, pick our vegetables, take care of farms, build cities, build houses. If the market says we need 500,000 workers, well, guess what? American companies are going to find the other 400,000 workers. As has been said time and time again, there's two proverbial signs at the border. One says do not enter, but the bigger sign says help wanted, inquire within. So as long as American companies continue to hire workers, they will come. They will continue to come. We have heard, as you said, for months and months about this caravan that was coming. There is nothing illegal. There's nothing illegal about someone coming to the border and requesting asylum.
Exactly.
There's not, in fact, if you're one of those people that say, well, they need to come the right way, technically they're coming the right way. They're coming up to – I'm not talking about somebody that's climbing the fence. I'm not talking about somebody who's throwing rocks over a wall or – I'm not talking about that person. I'm talking about if I walked up to the border and asked for asylum, I have not broken the law. I have done things legally. Our laws provide for someone to come and seek asylum. Where it gets difficult for some, it gets fishy, is when you have thousands of people coming at one time. Mm-hmm. How did this get organized? How are they getting here? I have a pastor friend in Mexico who pastors in Tijuana who told me that just trying to be good Christians, had gone and brought some water bottles and some different things to people that were walking, getting close to Tijuana, and reported that he met some people close there that, you know, they're speaking English. One person mentioned he was from Texas and had come, but that's not thousands of people. I don't ascribe to a lot of conspiracy theories. I don't believe that this is an invasion. I don't personally like that word. You do wonder, how did this get so organized and so put together? I mean, again, it's not a few hundred people or a few dozen. We're talking about thousands of people at this point. But again, all of this can be solved by the House and the Senate saying enough. We have to solve the we got to sit down. You know, there have been proposals. I mean, there's been legislation that would pass under John Boehner. There was at one point four different proposals, and if John Boehner would have called for a vote back then, any of the four would have passed.
Mm-hmm.
There have been proposals under Speaker Ryan, and if he would have called them to the floor for a vote, they would have passed. They've refused to do it. Whoever is elected or wins the position of Speaker of the House, I hope they call it to the floor for a vote.
Yes.
Earlier this year, Reverend Rodriguez led a delegation. I was in a part of that group, Pastor Sergio De La Mora from San Diego and a few others. And we went to Capitol Hill to meet with Leader Pelosi. Leader Pelosi, her message to us, and we were there by her invitation, was, what does it take? What do I need to do to bring immigration reform once and for all? What do I need to do? How can I work with the White House? Reverend Rodriguez talked to her about border security, about the importance of and Leader Pelosi's message. There was a press conference about it. She said, whatever the president needs, we'll give it to him. We'll give him the money to build the wall. We just don't want to see families separated anymore.
Okay. We got to take a break here. Tony, we got to take a break right here. It's Faith Radio Mornings. We'll be back and talk more about this issue and maybe some ways that we can help on this Giving Tuesday. Seven before the hour, Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, and Tony Suarez from the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference joining me. We only got a few minutes, Tony, and there's so much I wanted to get to, but let me ask this question. With the migrants right now, they've been kind of camped out at a soccer stadium in Tijuana, waiting to be processed, waiting to go through the asylum process, and they're running short on supplies. The Mexican government's been kind of back and forth. Is there ministries? Are there organizations on the ground there that would be that are helping these people with their daily needs?
Yeah, the NHCLC has a chapter in Mexico. It's led by our chapter director. His name is Fermin Garcia. And Fermin and his congregations there, which are his central congregation is based there in Tijuana, has visited the stadium. They've provided as needed. They've been able to provide food and just ministry, prayers, hope, and just try to be there for the caravan, even as they were entering Tijuana and while they're waiting and, as you said, camped out in the stadium. And the caravan that's come in has not necessarily even been extremely welcomed by the city of Tijuana. A lot of the citizens there are upset as they see this wait in limbo because their way of life right now has been disrupted because they're a border town. So it's gotten messy, but there's definitely churches and pastors on the ground trying to be the hands and feet of Jesus to as many as they can.
So if people wanted to, here it is, Giving Tuesday, if people wanted to help support the efforts there, because I'm sure they could use the funding to get the supplies they need, where can they go?
Yeah, if you go to nhclc.org, there's a giving button on there, and you can designate that gift. You can write Mexico Relief or Caravan Relief, if you will, and that would go directly towards that and those efforts. And I know that those people that are on the ground helping and those that would receive the help, it would mean the world to them. So thank you for that.
Yeah, our time has gone quickly, but I want to give you 1 minute because I remember talking to you months ago about this. I thought this book wasn't coming out till January, and it came out earlier this month, your new book, The Triumphant Church. Give me a 1 minute summary about it, because I know when you talked about it then, I was stoked. I'd love to hear about it.
Well, thank you so much. It came out 2 weeks ago. There is not one issue, problem, trial that the 21st century church is facing that the first century church did not have to face. Yet the first century church was able to revolutionize its world because it's built upon the promise that the gates of hell will not, cannot, and shall not prevail. And if that was true for one century and the last 20 centuries, that's true about the 21st century. And in a time when, in an era when a lot of people were giving doomsday prophecies and speaking the demise of the Christian church, history is showing us and current news is showing us that the church is not dead. It's not defeated. It's on an upswing. It's on a surge. It's on a revival. And the gates of hell will not prevail against it.
Okay, that book is called The Triumphant Church and maybe a great gift for Christmas, too. I don't know. But hey, Tony, thank you for joining us this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. Always appreciate your input.
Thank you so much, Paul. Have a great day.
All right, we'll be back. Faith Radio Mornings. Well, I'm Paul Perreault. I'm glad you've joined me this morning on Faith Radio Mornings again. Giving Tuesday, and I would hope you're not only just thinking, oh, giving money. Use it as an opportunity to develop a relationship with, you know, missionaries or other organizations that you support. And this is not the end all. Maybe it should be the start of something greater in how you are making an impact in the name of Jesus. Well, I'm Paul Perreault, and tomorrow, Carmen LaBurge will be sitting in this chair, along with her regular show, Connecting Faith, which is heard noon central, 1 p.m. Eastern, every weekday here on Faith Radio Mornings. You have a great day. Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.